Move on to the panel discussion. If I could have Randy and Ed chime back in if they're available here.
I'm here.
Okay, we'll have the panel discussion. My first point is across sort of all of the speakers here. You've talked about tight supplies in the hay market, the corn production and soybean production being limited for corn acres and things like that, and the wheat. Randy talked about having some good carryover stocks and availability. With respect to additional resources coming out, CRP, for example, coming out and going back into production, I'd like to get each of your thoughts on how that will help, if any, in terms of the tight supplies for corn and soybeans and hay. And I'll start with Shannon and Randy. They're both in the same area there in terms of what are your thoughts on additional acres going into production for hay, Shannon?
Well, it's those CRP fields, we've done some work on CRP and conversion of CRP to cattle grazing operations. It's very interesting. A lot of that CRP acreage in Washington is in the summer fallow wheat area. Very, very large. It's across the wheat production area, but even more concentrated in the wheat summer fallow area, which is very dry. I would say that it's not so much a resource for hay production, but it has greater potential as a forage resource from April to June. And I'll stop there to let somebody else say.
Okay, Randy.
Well, as Shannon said, it is sort of in the wheat producing area. At current wheat prices, I think there's a lot of interest among wheat producers that also have CRP to think about bringing some of that back into wheat production. So I think, you know, if you think out 2 or 3 years what happens to it, forage versus wheat, it's very much going to be driven by wheat prices. Right now, I think it would favor a return to wheat production. If you think about it nationally, it's kind of interesting because a couple years ago, there was a lot of talk, excuse me, about increasing potential corn acres, for example, on CRP, to satisfy ethanol demand. But if you look at where those CRP acres that are coming out, a large percentage of them are in areas that really aren't conducive to corn production. So a lot of it has to do with where the CRP acres are. And in Washington, as Shannon said, I think they will favor at current prices a return to wheat production.
Okay. And your thoughts on CRP acreage in your region or in the Midwest corn soybean belt and how that might impact?
Well, this is Ed Usset, and most CRP acres, I think of them as being, this is going to sound harsh, marginal acres, if you will. This is not the heart of the corn belt. I see it, if anything, more small grains, and it's not a corn and soybean issue in my mind.
Okay. In the back to Shannon for the hay there. What are the impacts of the cumulative effect of maybe an increasing livestock herd as we try to expand the increasing demand that you suggested for the small horn of the horse operated, those kinds of activities on the hay market in the next year? Will that will the cumulative demand for the potential increase in those demand be offset by any kind of supply side or just put upward pressure on prices?
I've been thinking about that, and I was in my opinion is where is that cow herd going to expand on the beef cow side? And I think that I was talking to some cattle producers and trying to, I don't know if convincing is the right word, but at least discuss with them that they have a relatively low drought risk. They have potential for low-cost pasture and range that they can expand their herd on. And so regionally, I think that I think on the beef cow side, there's going to be some regional advantages to expansion. And I think in the Northwest, we haven't had a drought lately in several years, and the drought hasn't been severe as what is seen in the Southwest. So I think it's regional. I think it's going to increase the demand for those hay wintering costs.
Okay. Ed, one of the questions that have come in is, U.S. yield projections for corn and soybean is higher for 2012-13, yet there are current projections for drought. How do they get those estimates and reconcile those?
Well, those are what we call trend line estimates, the trend line yield. And if you get a room full of grain analysts together, nothing could start a fist fight quicker than a discussion of trend line yields and where they come from. It is, in a nutshell, there are different ways of looking at it, but you look at the history and the increase in yields over time, and you try to project out how fast they're going, how fast they're rising, and they are, the trend line is certainly up in per acre production. It's just the USDA tends to use a trend line model that is pretty optimistic. If you want a more sober look at it, you look at what the University of Illinois does. They're about 7 bushels an acre apart on the year ahead. And, it's not something I like to argue a lot about because time will tell, which one comes true.
Okay. And Randy, a follow-up question, on the wheat industry here. Ed's sense of some of the impact on corn and wheat prices, or corn and soybean prices on land values. Do you see similar implications for land values continuing for the wheat sector of the U.S., or are they likely to decline, or how much would they decline if prices decline?
Well, as Ed pointed out, it's really not just about the price, it's about the margin. What's the profitability per acre of production look like? My sense right now is, as I look forward a couple of years anyway, that I don't really see a decline, but I see maybe a flattening. Usually what we notice first is rental rates go up, and then land prices tend to follow that. But if prices stay sort of in the $6 to $8 range as an average price, then I suspect that what we're going to sort of see is a flattening of prices, but certainly not a decline.
Thank you. Well, given that we have lots of other questions to ask here, but given interest in time and getting on to our next session, I'd like to thank our speakers. The remaining sessions for the day are livestock and dairy, which will be coming up at the top of the hour, and then followed by the specialty niche and food safety session at the end of the day. Again, we'd like to point you to the Ag and Uncertain Times companion website. We'll have the recordings of the webinars today. The presenter slides will be available at that set. Contact information and discussion of the webinar topics that we've had in the, today and in the past. We'd like to give you this opportunity also to go to the chat pod on the left-hand side of the screen and provide us some with input and feedback on what you like to see today and additional items that you would like to see covered in an Ag and Uncertain Times webinar. Send an email to the westrme@wsu.edu with your comments. We'd appreciate that very much. At the end of the session, we always give you an opportunity to download a pod that has the links for the information we had today. Put that pod on the screen now, and that'll allow you to click on the file listed in that pod, and then you can save to your computer the links for today, and it will lead you to the website and the resources that we discussed. I'd like to take the final opportunity to thank all of our speakers, Ed, Randy, and Shannon, for excellent presentations, and also on behalf of our AIU team working in the background, we thank you for joining us and hope you will join us again at the top of the hour for the next session. Thank you.